Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Level Up Human, the comedy science podcast, souping up the Homo sapien.
And welcome to Level Up Human, the show that looks at the human race and tries to figure out how we can make it better. This is a Royal Society special, recorded live at the Science Museum. We're taking suggestions from our panel, from our audience, and from the natural world to work out exactly what the next stage in human evolution should be. People say that to err is to be human, and we say we need an error correction mechanism. We will do our best. I'm your host, Simon Watts, and today I'm joined by three meaty puppets in the form of our guests. Tonight's judge, deciding which idea is most worth incorporating into future editions of our species, on my right is Paul Sinha. Now, you will know Paul from History Revision, from Paul Sinha's citizenship test, and also as the cineman on The Chase. Paul, what kind of ideas are you hoping to hear from our panel?
Anything that's going to improve the desperate despair that civilization now finds itself in. Anything to put a smile on these people's faces and go, no, the world is not a horrible place. There is hope for humanity. No pressure.
And pitching ideas to see what the next stage of human evolution should be, on my immediate left, it's Liz Tunbridge. Liz is a Royal Society Fellow from Oxford Uni trying to understand the link between genes and psychiatric disorders. What kind of psychiatric disorders are you working with?
I work with primarily schizophrenia and also bipolar disorder, which is manic depression.
And we can tell a lot by genes in these?
Yeah. There's a very strong genetic link to these illnesses. And in the last couple of years, we've tried to work out what the details are, which genes and why.
Fantastic. So she'll be pitching ideas from psychiatry and genetics. We're also joined by Dr. Robert Paul. Robert is a Royal Society Fellow in the Department of Chemistry at Durham Uni. His research focuses around the development of novel optical and super-resolution microscopy. Novel microscopy, are you just reading really tiny books?
Yes. No. What we try to do is that when you look at things using light, it's physically, by physics, is limited, which means that you do have your little barriers of how far you can see. And what we try to do is to use some clever techniques in optics and to break this diffraction barrier and look things in finer, smaller detail.
Wonderful. All right. And we'll also be taking suggestions from our fantastic audience here at the Science Museum. Give yourselves a round of applause. Right, before we leap into sci-fi and see what we'd like to change in our species, our panel have brought along some news stories with them. So can we start this time with you, Paul?
Yeah, this one's from the Daily Telegraph. This is one of only three stories from last week that wasn't about immigration, the Daily Telegraph. and it's quite a surprise. Well, I say quite a surprise. After the 18 months the world has had, nothing's really a surprise. But researchers have managed to turn something quite unusual into working heart tissue. Spinach.
What?
Yeah, researchers, let me just check the name of this place, Worcester Polytechnic Institute, have taken vascular tissue. Don't laugh. They're all scientists. Vascular tissue from spinach and turned it into working vascular animal tissue. I'm not entirely sure how they've done that, but the implications are that eventually, in years to come, they can, that if you want to revascularize human tissue, open up the blood supply, that you can, you don't have to use non-living tissue. Oh. You can actually use vegetable tissue, spinach. I mean, it worked for Popeye. That's the only actual successful case they've had thus far. I think in the understatement of the year, Glenn Gaudet, Professor of Biomedical Engineering at Worcester Polytechnic Institute, said, "We have a lot more work to do." But so far, this is very promising. And it's mostly, I mean, I usually plant an animal, they're completely separate entities. Yeah. The way that the vascular system works is considered to be a completely separate scientific concept. Apparently not so.
I kind of hate this research because this just makes people who take kale smoothies even more smug.
I mean, it's bad news for me because I've never had any fruit or vegetable in the last 30 years. I think the prospect of one day my heart giving out and I actually have to take spinach is a terrifying prospect. But
you were a GP. Surely you were always telling people to eat more fruit and veg.
Have you seen the size of the average GP? GPs are hypocrites and give out lifestyle advice they don't actually follow themselves.
That's why it's the hypocritical oath. Is that right?
Very good. Very good.
You may grow one now. We're just going to overdub that with applause. So
fine.
Oh, wait, what about you, Robert? What's caught your eye in the news?
I've been recently in the States, and I've caught my eye is that in the States, the scientists developed a small chip which got implanted into paraplegic people's brains. And now with their brain function, they can actually program some of the robotic limbs that actually is on their legs, and it was mainly on their legs, and it actually enabled one person to walk for about 30 years being a paraplegic, which I think is a fantastic achievement.
That's better than spinach, I'll give you that.
Yeah, so hold on, how's this working? You say a patch, like what are we doing to these people?
But basically they are, so you've seen many sci-fi movies that exoskeletons and various things in humans to make them better. And this basically enables them to walk, but instead of they actually being controlled by an external source, it's actually now they have a small device implanted in their brain, which somehow traps into the nervous system and it actually enables them to have regained some of the movement of their legs, which I think is pretty cool.
That is. All right, Liz, what about you? What's your new story?
I think mine is even more important for the fate of humanity because I have meditating mice. So this is a study in which researchers took patterns of brain activity that have been found to be altered in people who meditate regularly and mimic those in mice to see what happens. And basically, it seems to make them slightly less anxious. That's the bottom line. And they're following up on that to try and work out why it is, you know, what changes in the brain in order to mediate these potential effects of meditation.
What's an anxious mouse like? Is it just overeating cheese or something? What does this actually mean?
Eating less cheese, actually. So one of the big tests for anxiety is how long it takes a mouse to eat a new foodstuff because they're quite anxious about approaching new things. So a mouse that was kind of approaching all of the cheeses, you might be a bit suspicious about.
Did you ever imagine in your wildest dreams that you'd have such an instant answer to that question?
No, that was amazing. I do love this, actually, although you keep thinking that, you know, a chilled out mouse, the cat is bound to get it or something in this case. I love that. Fantastic. So, actually, does this mean then that we have conclusive proof that meditating actually does do people good for their health?
Not from this study, no, I don't think. Obviously, we don't know that these mice were meditating. My colleague is quoted in this article, actually. We have a Centre for Mindfulness in the Department of Psychiatry in Oxford, and he says quite nicely, mice clearly are not able to meditate in this sense, but it will be interesting to see what we can examine, find to be common across animals and humans. So clearly the mice weren't, you know, sitting around saying om or, you know, being present and in the moment.
I'm just imagining your lab dissecting them and looking for chakras. Like, that seems inevitable. All right, well, that's what's happening in the world right now. But let's get sci-fi on this. Let's see what our panel would like to see in the future. So if you're redesigning the species, let's start with you, Robert. What would you like to incorporate into the next human being?
Well, I was thinking so hard on this, and as a person who works with optics, I really should have gone with adaptive lenses and things, but that's obviously would put Specsavers out of business and I would get sued. So, Paul, have you ever landed penis first on a bicycle frame?
Is that a very personal
Not question? In the last 25
I can only
years.
Speak for the male population. I've done it many times. I keenly ride bicycles, and the pain is just excruciating. According to my wife, it's nothing compared to childbirth. Again, I have no opinion on that, because I've really never experienced that. But my idea would be that obviously the nervous system is really important, and pain is actually, the ability to feel pain is important, because it tells you that, oh, maybe I shouldn't do that, or B, something's wrong. But unfortunately, most of the time, the pain lasts for quite long, especially quite long, you know, before you can actually see someone. Not that I want to lean into the NHS or anything. But how good it would be, basically, the nervous system is like, you know, all the wires in a car. It just controls everything, and it's all connected. But how good it would be if you would have little programmable switches, and you can actually just switch pain off. You've got a headache, you switch it off, and until you see someone, you know, the doctor, to tell you that, oh, there's something wrong with you, clearly, because you've got this pain here, you know, you can just switch it back on and off again to see, oh, yeah, it's still there. I definitely need to go and see someone.
And what about emotional pain? Does that come in with it as well?
It does actually come as well, yeah, but usually there's other sort of sources to sort out emotional pain.
Yeah, like ice cream.
Yes, that's exactly what I wanted to say.
And how is the incident in 1984 with me and a rally chopper relevant to this?
It hurts, it does hurt, and it would have been really good that I can just switch it off and go, yeah, I can just walk away from that.
So come on, if we're going to go into this like in real depth, we have to kind of understand what pain is. Like, as you say, pain is useful.
Yes.
There is conditions that people can't feel pain, isn't that
there
correct?
There is a condition, and that's actually really dangerous, because studies show that unfortunately those people are pretty much dry, you know, prematurely, because of the inability to sense pain. It's not able to, you know, to get them that extra information, oh, hang on, there's something wrong with you.
So maybe this is the same technique that we use to switch pain on in them. Is that kind of ironic?
Like, you know, if it's a switch, it works in both ways, switching it on and off. And
can you tell us more about this switch? Because, like, I know half the problem of understanding pain is that you can have pain in the tissue, pain in the nerve, and pain in the brain.
All sorts of pains, yeah. And actually, with cancer patients, there's something called breakthrough pain, which is actually, they take their usual medication to numb the, you know, the suffering they have, but sometimes medication interacts with various things, you know, what you eat, other medications take, and they suddenly just feel some pain and they cannot really explain that. Why is it there? Is it, you know, something's gone bad? And then again, the emotional pain starts and various things.
Can I ask, are you taking into account acute pain, which is of no particular harm to anybody, really?
Yeah. Well, you know, you switch off acute pain, you switch it back on the next day, and it's gone, it's not chronic pain, you say, oh yeah, oh, everything's fine. Yeah.
Because obviously chronic pain and acute pain are very different
things.
Very
different, yeah.
Chronic pain is...
This is long-lasting.
And is usually caused by something that's fundamentally untreatable.
Yeah.
Or often caused by something that's fundamentally untreatable.
Yeah.
So it's a different emotional concept.
Mm.
I'd be far more sympathetic to somebody saying, I'm in constant pain,
yes,
and can you do something about
definitely
it?
Definitely.
Than I would be to someone saying, I'm having my jabs tomorrow. Can you give me a switch to switch things off?
I know a friend, actually my cousin, I think of it, he works with the units and they're analysing people who work, I think the condition is called burning man syndrome. There's people who permanently feel like they're on fire. It's effectively all their neurons are constantly switched on. So understanding pain seems to really matter, definitely.
Yeah.
To
I mean, it's a form of neuropathy when you actually, you physically don't have a stimuli, which actually, not just stimuli, which triggers the pain. What you have is your nerves actually by default not functioning well, and you constantly feel pain. I mean, one of the, if I go back, which was really funny, one of the things that sort of inspired me, that my grandfather was a double amputee, and he always, always complained about what we call phantom pain. It's saying that, oh, my thumb hurt, my toe hurts, or my fingers are, you know, my toes are itching, and you look down, it's not there. So in this case, it would be really, really good to help these people and switch this off and just, you know, make them forget about it.
And one of my worries is that if news ever gets out that there's a switch,
there's a switch
you can take to cause pain, I think the NHS would be annihilated within a week. Certainly, I think we'd have GPs leaving the profession, so their surgeries would be flooded with people saying, please give me that switch. I don't think, it seems to me that you'd have to regulate who gets this switch.
I don't know, or maybe they will actually have more time of doing, you know, other stuff, which is at the moment time consuming.
Is there any idea of a mechanism around this thing? Like, how do we already, like, because we obviously already have anesthetics, so to some extent we are good at turning off pain temporarily. How does this stuff work?
Yeah, but if you use anesthetics and you obviously use either local anesthetic, that's sort of a relatively still large area. it's not just one switch in one line of the nervous system to actually get there to switch things off in the spot. You know, everybody can take painkillers. I'm not advocating it because it's not necessarily a good thing just to go numb all day. It's not necessarily a way to go. So, you know, it's different mechanism. And instead of this, you know, you can literally just interrupt one sort of area, in this case, one specific area, rather than taking, let's say, a drug which could affect many, many other things.
Wonderful. What do you reckon then, Paul? Is this on the shortlist?
Well, everything's going to be on the shortlist. It's not that long a show, and also I don't have the social bravery to say to someone, no, that's not going to be on the shortlist. So yes, it's on the shortlist, but I do think we need to distinguish.
If you had a switch to
with
turn
the level of necessity.
Yeah. So like with caveats. So you're going to have to, like, not everybody gets the switch. It's something that has to be prescribed,
taken on a case by case basis.
Okay. All right. Looks like you're up, Liz. Can you beat that?
I will try. I will do my best. So my pitch is I would like to have a suite of different kinds of pills that you could take that would selectively improve different kinds of brain function. So say you've got an exam coming up, you need to be able to focus on the exam paper, so you take your attention pill and it lasts for a couple of hours and it gives you the attention that you need to get through your exam. Say your friend has just broken up with a boyfriend and you've heard a lot about the breakup of this relationship and you're a little bit over it. Maybe you want to take your empathy pill so you can be particularly empathetic and listen yet again to how awful all of this was. So that's my pitch, specific pills for specific brain functions.
Sorry, so like you're saying an attention pill, a niceness pill, you're basically saying a pill for every type of emotion that we need.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. What do you reckon?
Where do you start? I think more importantly, you need to start educating people from a young age into becoming rounded, well-behaved human beings rather than giving them the quick solve of a pill. And I'm a professional quizzer. An attention pill would count as some sort of performance-enhancing drug, and everybody would be at it. Now, similarly, I'm a former doctor. Would it be right that I passed an exam because I took an attention pill the previous night, and that's what helped me to pass my exam, but 6 years later, with an acute asthmatic in front of me, I've completely forgotten what's the treatment regimen to treat that patient because I haven't taken my attention pill that enabled me to know what it was 6 years earlier in a written exam, but I've now forgotten. Would you not get a hierarchy of performance level? The one thing I do agree with you to a degree is empathy. I'm a big fan of empathy. I'm a big fan of the fact that there needs to be more empathy around. And I witter on endlessly about the fact that empathy is something that's diminishing in a world that's becoming increasingly addicted to machines and devices and gadgets and not enough to human communication. But I'm not sure that the pill is the right way to go.
Actually, there is a good question. I do know that for one time, like, I'd love to ask you this, Liz, because this is very much your area. Like, you're understanding how these pills can change people. I know that for a little time, ecstasy was prescribed for couples counselling. Mm-hmm. And as far as I know, it did make them fall in love together, but the problem was when they came off the pill, nothing had changed. Is this right? Like, how does this work?
Yeah, so there's actually surprising interest at the moment in a number of what we would call kind of illegal drugs in their potential therapeutic use. So, for example, ketamine, which is used quite widely as a street drug, it actually works for intractable, untreatable depression. So there's a ketamine clinic in Oxford that administers ketamine to people.
Do you have the address of this?
I can put you up with a lead researcher, but you'd have to be intractably depressed in order to...
Is there a lot of depressed horses? Is that why this works?
No, I guess that's why they're all so happy.
Why the
dog face? But the idea, I guess, is that if you give somebody a really big slug of ketamine, it sort of resets their brain in a similar way to ECT. It's almost like a reboot switch. And in addition, there's other research in London into whether psilocybin, which is the chemical in magic mushrooms, might be used to kind of facilitate certain kinds of therapy. So it's quite an active research area at the moment. Crazy though it sounds, the idea that you might be able to use some of these drugs that have abuse potential or, you know, have target off-target effects that people enjoy in some kind of therapeutic capacity.
Well, I mean, cocaine has a therapeutic use dilated the pupils of the eyes and as an anesthetic.
Mm-hmm. And it's been used to treat narcolepsy as well, to keep people awake. It's not so much now. But
and morphine, of course. Mm-hmm. So it's not unknown. But what surprises me in what you're saying is, where does this go? Because for the last few decades, every single government in this country has shown a steadfast refusal to even contemplate making illegal drugs legal.
Yeah, and it's a massive problem from a research point of view, because the legislation that's been brought in the last few years essentially means that it's very difficult to access these drugs for research purposes. So as soon as something that, say, is a legal high, for example, comes on the market and is designated legal high, we can't get hold of it to see what it actually does, which is a really big problem.
Are you telling me that researchers are stockpiling legal highs just in case for research purposes?
Well, we can't anymore. That's been outlawed.
Oh, wow. So this is suppose the thing we've got to really get down to here, because what you're dealing with is trying to use these substances for treating people who've got what's called abnormal function. Mm-hmm. This isn't enhancement yet.
No.
Where do these things, where's the grey area here, I suppose I'm asking? Where do these things turn from from making people who are suffering better to making everybody leveled up?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really, really fascinating ethical question, and I think it's a question for society, really. It's not particularly a science question. We know that there are drugs, for example, the intention-enhancing drugs, they exist already, so they're used to treat conditions like narcolepsy, which is where people fall asleep in an uncontrollable manner. But the best evidence we have suggests that they also increase alertness and awakeness in healthy people as well. And I think there's a really interesting ethical grey area. You're right, people don't like the idea of taking a pill to enhance exam performance, but I speak to people quite a lot and I say, well, if you had a surgeon who was doing a really complicated surgery on you and it was going to take 14 hours, would you want them to take a pill that might enhance their alertness and maybe make them pay attention? I think, what do you think, guys?
Okay, like, by whipping, who would like your surgeon to take the pill?
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okay, you need an attention pill because that was a delayed response. There was one. Okay, by whooping, who thinks this is sick and wrong and our surgeons should not have anything? Okay, have a whip for crippled indifference.
I'd want to check the side effects list very carefully before I decided whether any surgeon was going to operate on me for 14 hours, because most medication has side effects, and you wouldn't want those to kick in. We're not suggesting, by the way, that surgeons have ketamine before.
No, I wouldn't advocate that. I think that would be a spectacularly bad idea.
Well, it's interesting that both of your ideas involve shortcutting. Mm. As opposed to getting to the root of the problem.
Is it on the short list then?
Of course, it's on the short list.
Speaking of shortcutting, I do remember there was a friendly fire incident think it was back at the time of the Iraq War, and they found out it was because American pilots had hit some British tanks, and it was because he was on, well, they argue it was because he was on amphetamines to keep him awake while flying. And they said, well, what do you expect them to do? And they said, well, the British Army, they let them sleep. That was, yeah, you use different people. Yeah, so there's definitely this issue. These issues do matter. Mm-hmm. So it's on the shortlist in spite of your reservations. Mm. Right, audience, you're up. Can you beat our experts? What are your ideas? If you have them, get your hands in the air now. Hello, sir.
Hi, I'm Raj. I work in security, IT security specifically, and one of the fields that we have an interest in is obviously biometrics. One of the problems with that is if you're identifying someone, then clearly you want some kind of fixed marker you can identify them by. But the trouble is, it's fairly gruesome, but if you're, say, using someone's retina or their fingerprint, someone comes along, chops it off, they can use it. The other thing is, if for some reason you need to change that because you need to reject that authentication, we have no way of changing our biometrics. So I would like to see some way that we can actually change something like maybe our fingerprint or our retina pattern by choice.
So changing your fingerprints and changing your this sounds like it might have a nasty side effect.
Your biometrics. Your biometrics in general. It wouldn't necessarily be your retina, but your fingerprint. Something that's used for biometric recognition.
So we want to be able to...
DNA.
Okay, so I'm just making sure I've got this right. You want to give criminals all the super tools.
That's one of the common arguments that's thrown at not having security at all, is because the criminals will use it. Criminals are the minority. Teach people to use security properly. It's our right, not just theirs. It's not a question of the technology's wrong, it's who uses it.
I'm very correct. Wonderful. What do you reckon, Paul?
For the first time this evening, I'm utterly stumped. I'm not entirely clear. You work in security, so you have to identify people by biometric means, and you want to give them the tools to cheat you.
No. That information is going to be stored somewhere. If that information, as it's stored, is compromised, someone else can use it. It's just like changing your password. It's like changing. If something is used to identify you at a point in time, there's no guarantee that that same identifier is going to be valid or useful at another point in time. You may need to change it.
So you're talking, there are going to be byproducts of this, surely. Because actually, I like the idea of being able to change everything. Like, I'd have two thumbs sometimes, just more efficient texting. It'd be like koalas.
I don't know how to tell you this, but you do have two thumbs.
Oh, yeah. double thumbs down for me. I was thinking like a koala because they've got four thumbs more accurately in that case. So maybe this could be a good thing. I'm trying to think of why. I'm wondering about your idea though. You're saying that the criminals are in the minority, but is that partly because we can be identified? If I was a shape shifting. If I could get away with it, basically. I'm doubting myself here. I'm not questioning your integrity.
That's questioning ethics, though, isn't it? That's making the assumption that everyone, if they're not enforced to being good, will be bad. And I don't agree with that.
I think I might, though. No, like, I don't mean in terms... I don't think everybody. I just reckon I would game the system. Maybe... Actually, come on, Paul. You're the judge after here. I'm not going to fight with this.
Well, it's on the shortlist. I'll give you that. It's definitely on the shortlist. But all the criminals are the minority, yes. The number of people who benefit from this technology was also very small. To be fair, he's quite scary and he's disagreeing with me, so I'm going to say definitely on the shortlist.
It's on the shortlist. Give Raj a round of applause. Thank you. Hiya.
Hello, hi, I'm Ollie. What about, you mentioned empathy earlier, some way to kind of like sync either your emotions or something you're trying to get across, a piece of knowledge with someone else, so the ability to almost have like a Bluetooth connection with another person.
Emotional sync?
That could be emotions, it could be anything kind of in your head that you can't quite, you don't feel you could express well enough, and you, instead you sync it straight to someone else's head, almost like telepathy.
Or being in love.
So you could force it on them effectively. That's I love you enough for both of us. Is that what you're trying? This sounds like a really interesting... Actually, panel, what do you think? Because bearing in mind that you understand psychiatric disorders, mm-hmm. and empathy is surely a big part of this.
Yeah, I'd be really worried. I know how long it takes to sync my phone. I'd be worried if I met people that I'd just spend the first 5 minutes syncing with them, and I feel like that would not be so efficient. I think you'd want to have some kind of way of controlling it, you could either decide to or not with people.
Could this send mental illness viral, effectively?
I suppose... potentially, but it could also send the cure viral, I guess, as well. It depends. I suppose it depends how much control you have over the syncing process.
What do you reckon? This is another thing that leads to a lot of cheating and quizzes, wouldn't it? somebody's sat in the mastermind hot seat and they're getting all the answers from their loved one who sat watching them in the audience. Or pointless, where you each take turns to answer the question and that your partner has stood right behind you. Telling you with their mind what to answer, so I'm not sure. It was horrific dinner parties as well. Dinner parties where couples are absolutely synced with each other would be a pretty horrific experience. As well.
But just imagine if you actually come to the feature of like, would you accept sync from this person? Or no, and that person would just get depressed. So that's clearly no.
Great. Well, is it on the shortlist?
Yes, it's on the shortlist.
It's on the shortlist. Fantastic. Hello, sir.
Hello. My name is Jacob. There might be moral and technical obstacles to my suggestion, but it's basically...
Join the club.
Yeah. Installing kind of robotic upgrades. So whether that be installing hard drives to improve memory, improving your exoskeleton so you can dive and process oxygen underwater and experience new environments. I mean, there could be any kind of application and any number of technical developments in place before that happens, but I guess the principle of completely robotic upgrades into our systems.
So can I make sure I got this right? You're suggesting to Paul that you're just after the options of cybernetics?
Kind of applied in a bespoke manner and into our systems.
Give us more detail. What are you wanting?
I mean, installing hard drives to improve memory capacity and also just memory banks like you could in the computer. Upload information is very helpful, but you could have wide applications, improving strength and speed, whatever, just kind of capacities of engineering which are beyond the human capacity.
Well, it's interesting because we have that to a degree already, but only in people who are in disabled sport. Mm. A lot of them are extremely reliant on. On technology. And in fact, I think there's a German long jumper whose name is Markus Rehm, I think his name is, who actually long jumps as well as anybody else in the world with the technology that he now has. So it's happening already, but only people who are considered to have had a disability in the first place. So what you're suggesting is make the able-bodied super able.
Basically,
goes back in evolution.
That is the idea of the podcast as well. You're aware of that. That's the whole point here.
Yeah. And it needs to be. Does it not need to be reversible? Because the man who you need to have an amazing exoskeleton to do a certain job in the military, say, is still going to be unable to do his job after about 25 years on account of his age, and then he's left with this exoskeleton. That he has not got much use for. I'm sure he'll find use for it. I suspect that what you're suggesting is already being researched
I think
done.
You're very much onto something here, particularly saying about the early adopters. So like for cybernetics and for this kind of tech, the early adopters tend to either be people who are now missing parts or people who've got more money than sense. That seems to be the two angles. So the people who take on these technologies most of all are people who just really want to have a robot arm, and people who have to have a robot arm because they're missing one.
I suspect there are industrial applications to your ideas. As you say, when you mentioned the guy who goes diving for stuff, I imagine that super divers are something that could be quite useful to somebody.
I hate the idea of, when you're saying about industrial application though, but of like my company owning my body, that terrifies me. No one else?
No.
Is it on the shortlist?
Yes, it's on the shortlist.
So cybernetic options. You're on, Jacob. Oh, yeah.
Hi, I'm Megan. My idea is kind of along the lines of yours, but being able to control what hormones your body releases and when you release them. So say everyone's to feel a bit happy, you release some serotonin, or you're feeling anxious about something, you could stop your body releasing those hormones.
I guess a better example would be kind of beta blockers to stop anxiety responses. So people that are really acutely anxious can be really crippled by essentially their hormone flight or flight response just goes haywire. And we have drugs that can block that and work quite well in those people. But I guess you're suggesting that you could just take them almost recreationally or for other...
You produce it yourself, basically. Yeah, whenever you want, you just make more or make less.
I think I'd make less. I always think that I would not wish puberty on my worst enemy. That's the big hormonal change that we go through. And surely, actually, the one that really leaps out of here would be the menopause. Like, lots of people undergo HRT, and you're effectively suggesting a better means of that.
How would the puberty one work, though, right? Because you wouldn't want to just block puberty.
Oh, I would opt out.
No, you'd opt out.
Or just have it
in a really short period of time, like a really bad day. Is that what you're
suggesting?
Over
and done within a day. Okay. You know, one day of acne, horniness, and anger. Like, that's all.
I was singing like Keep Quiet before I had this voice. So
yeah. Why? Actually, I suppose here's a question for you, Megan, really. Bearing in mind that our hormones do slightly dictate who we are. Actually, my main one is, man, if I'm hungry, I'm morose. Can you think you really can trust ourselves with dealing with these things? Or are we going to end up just...
Probably not. Probably if you want to control your hormones like that, then it's probably a good idea for you not to go into.
Yeah, maybe.
It's interesting. Like, the way you can train your muscles, you can train how you release that or build up in your body.
Yeah, because enhancement will be one of the first ones. People who want to bodybuild and the like will be switching up the testosterone a whole lot. They'll get colds as a side effect. That's one of the things. Dampens your immune system.
I don't think they care.
They don't care. They're not worried about man flu. These. Well, hold on. Is that on the shortlist?
It's on the shortlist.
Well then, Megan, give her an applause. Hello.
Hey. I was pretty far out. I did.
Is that why you're not telling us your name? Is it going to be so far?
I'm Josh.
Thanks, Josh.
Imagine if you had all your bones were pre-broken with special connectors in them that made them un-pre-broken. So you could break your bones and fix them instantly. So as you were skateboarding, you could have like a button, and as you were falling off, you'd be like, okay, you press it, and all your bones would like go into a jelly. And then you'd hit the wall, flop off, and then press the... Well, I guess you'd have to get someone to press the button. Then you're like springing back together, and this probably wouldn't do your internal organs any good.
This does not sound good for your brain, for a start. Brain would not like this.
Okay, hold on. Finish your thought. Before Liz pounces on you, finish your thought.
I'm a bit more of an engineer than a biologist, so this probably won't work biologically. But if you could buy yourself out of a cannon. Like, instead of taking the bus, you could just fired at the wall next to your work, and then you'd splat against the wall, and then go through like a field, and then that would activate your bones again, and you could stand up.
So rather than suggesting a helmet, you have suggested...
I mean, if you have the urge to fire yourself in Alpha McCannon, it might be nature's way of telling you that you're not part of the equation.
Maybe you don't need to get to work that fast. Maybe you should just take the bus.
Can we call these Lego bones?
Lego bones, I like that.
Sure. I think it's quite clear that psilocybin is the main ingredient in magic mushrooms, isn't it? somebody's been partaking in the last couple of hours. I like the idea of being fired out of a cannon to work, but it would make the traffic reports very entertaining in the morning. but I don't think it's practical.
Well, if everyone was doing it, we'd all hit ourselves in midair as well.
Also, before you keep attacking this man, because we know that this does work, because this works with children. Because children effectively have more bones, and they heal better, so actually they survive many more injuries than maybe adults wouldn't. How do you feel about this now?
I still wouldn't advocate firing the child at cannon. I think that still seems like a bad idea.
I was about to say sorry to Josh, but you're fair. Okay. Is this on the shortlist, though?
Yes, of course it's on the shortlist.
Give Josh a round of applause. I love suggestions like that. That's what we need more of. That's the kind of thinking. Well, before we finish, we've got one final idea that I'm going to take from Mother Nature. What would you steal from this creature? Can you describe it to our people at home, please, Paul?
It's a very large lizard.
It is. This is the New Mexico whiptail lizard, also known as the lesbian lizard. So this is one of the species of lizards which has undergone a process called parthenogenesis. Whenever it reproduces, it only makes clones. So it makes itself as a kind of a, it's what we call parthenogenesis, a form of asexual reproduction. But it still has sex. So they don't have to, but they do. And more importantly, actually, they do have to. They kind of mount each other. That's the only way they can force each other to ovulate. So they have got the legacy, the history of having had males in their system. So what I'm suggesting we do, we get rid of guys, but you can still have some fun. What do you think, Paul?
I'm a gay man.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to disagree with you. Well, maybe... call me biased. Call me biased, but it's an amazing story, and I believe they're the only lizards that are really good at tennis. I disagree with your suggestion.
Okay, although this could be... I just like the idea of cloning full stop, and this seemed like a particularly fun way of doing it, maybe. It's off. Okay, then. I don't feel rejected at all. Here we are. So we've got a couple... we've got a lot of ideas to get through here, Paul. So are we going to go for Robert's idea of a pain on-off switch? Liz's idea of a pill for everything. One makes you bigger, one makes you small. Raj's idea of biometric changes, being able to rehack our bodies at will to change every kind of password. Ollie's sinking our minds like a sort of telepathy. Jacob's idea of just every possibility for cybernetics. Megan's hormone control, or Josh's pre-broken bones. That's a lot to choose from.
That is a lot to choose from, and some of them have some similar elements to them, which is essentially that they're treating what we naturally have, whether it's empathy or happiness or retinas. Some of it is to do with pathology, the treatment of pain, and I have sympathy with the idea that chronic pain needs an off switch, certainly. But the one I'm going to go for, just for sheer originality, is the sinking at the back. The idea that two people can actually sink their thoughts and emotions. Let's be honest, in about 20 years' time, this is actually going to happen, I think. I think it's fair to say. So we can all say we were there when we first heard the idea being mooted. And so I'm going to go for sheer originality, and because I would get into trouble if I actually agreed with shooting children out of a cannon. So for sheer originality, I'm going to go for the idea that people should they so choose, sink their emotions.
Wonderful. Ollie, how does it feel having this responsibility thrust upon you?
He feels great.
Do I actually... I mean, do I actually get any money from this? Like, it's a public record that I came up with. So,
we can start up a Kickstarter.
Okay. No, that's cool. I literally, just when you said empathy, that was the burgeoning of the idea. It just grew from there over the next 3 minutes.
Fantastic. Give Ollie a huge round of applause as well. Thank you. And before we go, I've got one final thing to do. I want you to give a huge round of applause to Liz Tunbridge, Robert Powell, Paul Sinner, and our wonderful audience here at the Science Museum in London.
That was Level Up Human, hosted by Simon Watt, produced by Rachel Wheely, and supported by the Wellcome Trust. For more information, go to leveluphuman.com.
Thank you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.